When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Live on tape from the Ed Sullivan Theater in New York City, it's Stephen Colbert!
Oh, you! That's the man I've been talking about. There you go. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. That's a shot of, shot of energy right there. Hey! Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome one and all in here, out there to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. It's election day in many places across the country, and including here in New York, where it is the mayoral election. Voters will get to replace Bill de Blasio with their favorite option, anyone else. Now, the two anyones in question are Democrat and guy regretting having picked I Will Always Love You at karaoke, Eric Adams, and Republican and French gym owner Curtis Sliwa. Oui, monsieur. Now, we tape this show around 5:30 in the afternoon, which is before the polls close, so we don't know who won. Congratulations, Eric Adams. Looming, probably. Sorry, Curtis. Sorry. Looming defeat did not stop Curtis Sliwa from trying to vote earlier today with an adorable kitten named Gizmo. Election workers would not let the cat in, but it is cute. It reminded me of when Mayor Bloomberg went to the polls riding on the back of a mouse. He's very small. He's a very, very small man. Very rich, very small. The media are in a tizzy over the Virginia governor's race, featuring Democrat and students saying, "Oh, teacher, you've got to give us homework." Terry McAuliffe against former private equity CEO and unholy love child of Mr. Rogers and Ted Cruz. Wow.
You want to be a friend like that?
Right. I have seen too much. I must wipe away my eyes. Glenn Youngkin. Again, we have no idea who won, but we do know one thing. This is the most important election of the century of this year, is what the national press keeps saying. We'll have more on the story if I feel like talking about it tomorrow. It's also Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead. But if climate change continues at its current pace, soon it'll just be called Day. World leaders are talking about maybe doing something about it at the UN Climate Conference in Glasgow. Wait a second, doing something about climate at a climate conference? What are the odds? Not good. But they've agreed to do some stuff. Yesterday, more than 100 world leaders pledged to halt deforestation by 2030. Of course, to do that, they'll need a detailed plan that they'll need to print out on thousands upon thousands of pieces of paper. And no one was happier about the agreement than British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, seen here sticking his Johnson in a light socket. Johnson, any part of him, is the Johnson. It's all Johnson. Johnson had one man he wanted to single out for praise.
Let me begin by thanking Joe, President Biden, for your fantastic commitment today. I say to everybody else here at this COP, let's end this great global chainsaw massacre.
Coincidentally, chainsaw massacre is what Boris Johnson asked for at the barber. They got a little
They got his line. They pushed his line back.
Someone also got a video pep talk from young climate activist Queen Elizabeth.
I, for one, hope that this conference will be one of those rare occasions where everyone will have the chance to rise above the politics of the moment.
We must all come together because the enemy is so clear. Just like in World War II, when everyone knew where they stood and no one's uncle was Nazi curious. Don't Google it. She queened on.
The benefits of such actions will not be there to enjoy for all of us here today. We none of us will live forever.
Are you sure? Because it seems like you're pretty close. One, she looks good. She looks fine. She looks good.
Yeah, she looks good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
One world leader who's not at the climate conference is Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, seen here mid-Brazilian. He's in Italy, where he was asked about Brazil's climate policy and told reporters about a high-level meeting he had with one official, quote, "Yeah, I talked to Jim Carrey, too. Something private. Sorry, I can't talk to you." Yes, Jim Carrey. A lot of people think he meant U.S. climate envoy John Kerry, but I think he meant Jim Carrey. After all, a lot of countries have promised to reduce emissions, but I say, liar, liar. To believe them, you'd have to be dumb and dumber. I mean, Bruce Almighty, if we don't save the Earth from the damaging effects of eternal sunshine, we may be forced to put every man on the moon, not to mention what's going to happen to the polar ice caps and Mr. Popper's Penguins. If we don't solve this crisis, we'll regret it. Batman forever. Okay, there we go. There you go. Get this out of there. There you go. There you go. You okay?
Hey!
Oh, hey, he said, shifting gears.
Yeah.
There's big news for the little ones. After approval by the FDA, today the CDC voted to give the Pfizer vaccine to kids ages 5 to 11. That's great! That's wonderful!
He's giving it around the corner.
But some people are worried about kids having trypanophobia or fear of needles. Now, to be fair, they're not phobic of needles. They're scared of being stabbed by them. I'm not scared of pineapples, but I would be worried if my doctor grabbed one and said, okay, bend over and try to relax. But experts say there are ways to put your kids at ease. For instance, you can prepare them by reading children's books about going to the doctor. I recommend one shot, two shot, booster shot, maybe more shots, we're not sure. But check it. Check it. If you're really worried about your kid's reaction to pain, doctors say you can ask for numbing creams, which will dull the sensation of the needle on their skin. We have that? What else are doctors hiding from us? Oh, well, we have this pill that makes root canal feel like an orgasm, but you wouldn't be interested. Psychologists say that parents can also have their children create a playlist to listen to during the appointment. Absolutely not. I get wanting to make your kid comfortable, but they don't need a playlist for one shot. For Pete's sake, on the playground, these kids aren't going, wait, Tyler, before I throw these wood chips in your face. Let me put on your white noise machine and give you your comfort animal. Do you need a numbing cream for your feelings? No? Okay, punch him. There's some big news. I was bullied on a playground. I'm saying I was bullied. I was bullied on the playground. There's some big news from the endless void, and it has to do with orbital toilets. And I'll tell you all about it in tonight's Space News. Plumbing edition. Some rough news for the SpaceX astronauts. Back in September, their first capsule had toilet issues. And while that's being fixed, a second capsule called Endeavour now also has a leaky toilet and evidence of urine leaking into the walls. And because they're in space, they don't have a way to immediately fix the issue. Apparently, when you're up there, you can't just call the super. Look, I know you got pee walls, but first I got a tenant on Ganymede with intergalactic rats. Then I'll be gone for a week visiting my daughter in space, Pittsburgh. It's like Pittsburgh, but in space. The lack of plumbing solutions on the capsule will leave a group of four astronauts without a bathroom option during their hours-long trip back home. But NASA has a solution. The crew should rely on undergarments. Okay, but be careful which undergarments you choose, because it is very hard to poop in a bra. You do get two shots, then you can fire it out the window. In other news from the ISS, astronaut Megan MacArthur used the first chili peppers grown in space to make zero-G tacos. They better hurry up and fix that space toilet. You know why? You know why, right? I'll tell you all about it in tonight's edition of Space News, Space Tacos Edition. The taco-making astronaut tweeted a picture of her meal with the caption, "Friday feasting." What? Okay, look, this is a troubling trend. Just last month, National Taco Day was on a Monday. And now another violation of the sanctity of Taco Tuesday, Space Taco Friday. Do our Earth holidays mean nothing to you up there? Unless there's a scientific explanation. I mean, after all, the ISS does orbit the Earth about 17,200 miles an hour, once every 90 minutes, meaning each day on Earth is 16 days in space. And due to relativity, Earth's Fajita Fridays might be their sizzling steak Saturdays, and in zero G's, their margaritas are not only bottomless, but they have no sides or top. We have to get our best scientists on this, or Jimmy Buffett. On the other hand, today, a Tuesday, is National Deviled Egg Day. So, Satan wins again. Sad.
Gotta fight it back.
Even more concerning, no one knows the effects of consuming tacos with space chilies. But preliminary research does not look good, according to this footage from a recent study.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
I got a great show for you tonight.
Coming up, meanwhile.
Hi, I'm Jordana Abraham.
And I'm Dr. Naomi Bernstein.
And we want to tell you about Calm the F*** Down, a guided meditation series from the Oversharing Podcast. This is something we've been planning for a long time. It's our most requested segment from the podcast. And these meditations are going to be between 5 and 10 minutes. They're going to be super quick because we don't have a lot of time. You're going to be so surprised how 5 to 10 minutes of really thoughtful meditations can transform your whole life. In addition to the first four meditations available at launch, we'll be doing two new meditations every single month. Plus, for the fans of Oversharing Podcast out there, you'll also get ad-free versions of every episode of the Oversharing Podcast.
So if somebody wants to become a subscriber, how do they join?
It's so easy. You just go to subscribe.betches.com and sign up now for only $4.99 a month. Or you can lock in our discounted rate if you sign up for the whole year. That's subscribe.betches.com. Or if you're in the Apple Podcasts app, you can just hit the subscribe button now and sign up in the app. It's as easy as that.
John. I love that. I love that outfit. I really like the boldness of that pink. What would you call that?
It's like bubble gum.
That's exactly right.
Bubble gum ice cream. You see, it's a good vibe to feel the colors of your childhood.
Mm-hmm. It's also a real wake me up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that's like a cup of coffee for my eyes right now.
Yes.
Oh, speaking of waking up, tomorrow morning you're going to be on CBS Mornings.
CBS Mornings. Mornings. That's right.
CBS Mornings.
Yes.
And
yes.
What are you doing at CBS Mornings?
I'm singing a song that I wrote with my good friend Tori Kelly, and the song is called Sing, and you don't want to miss it. It's going to be a great performance.
Now, when might people? Yeah. Do we know what time is that show on?
Yeah.
When's that show come on?
It's
Comes on at 7. Are you on at 7? When are you going to be on?
Yeah, yeah.
You're on 7? Are you going to open it up with you?
Yeah, the morning. Well, I'll be in there later on, later after 7.
Sometime?
Yeah.
You don't seem like a 7 a.m. man to me.
Yeah, unless I've stayed up from the night before.
You just got to drive through.
You just drive it on.
Drive
home.
Through. Yeah. All right, I'll be sure to check it out.
Typically, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, is it morning or CBS Mornings? Is it plural?
I think they called the show is Mornings.
Like Mornings, because it used to be CBS This Morning.
Yeah.
So it was only that morning they were concerned about. But every show,
right.
Every show now is all mornings.
Yeah, it's all mornings.
Yeah, that's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
A lot of responsibility. I have to check it out. Well, folks, you know I spent a lot of time right over there carving the finest, most topical Japanese news cypress into an expressive Hanya demon mask. Donning my black and gold shozoku robes made of the smoothest story silk and mastering the elaborate choreography of stillness and movement to create the Japanese no-theater production that is my nightly monologue. But sometimes, just sometimes, folks, I enter a fugue state in the middle of the night, siphon a bucketful of gasoline out of my neighbor's Mazda, run barefoot from my house to a hovel under the turnpike where I ask a hobo for a light and set a garbage can ablaze, then place my frostbitten hands in front of the dumpster to project the shadow puppet wino opera of news that is my segment. Meanwhile, it's like a breath of fresh air is what it is. It's oxygen. To a starved brain. Meanwhile, the soup scientists at Heinz have had a breakthrough because Christmas dinner in a can promises an answer to supermarket shortages. That's right, hot, festive sludge. Quick, children, gather around. Grandpa's gonna carve the soup. The can reportedly contains big chunks of turkey, pigs in blankets, Brussels sprouts, stuffing balls, and potatoes with a gravy and cranberry sauce. It's so convenient when food gives you a preview of what it'll look like when you throw it up later. Big soup. Meanwhile, in Spain, the place where American college kids go to become insufferable, there's an ongoing scandal after a woman won a million-euro Spanish literary prize. Then it turned out that she was actually three men. This is even worse than last year, where a man won the prize, but it turned out that he was actually three kids inside a trench coat. Meanwhile, two California condors had virgin births. Scientists made the discovery when they did genetic testing and found that none of the other male birds qualified to be the fathers of either chick based on the differences in their DNA. And I'm being told we have footage of the moment the condors got the news.
You are not the father.
Meanwhile, in England, a mother and son discovered a 100-year-old love note hidden under a broken bedroom tile, reading, "My own darling, my own, my own. Will you try every morning to come and see me? But please don't tell anyone, because it must be a secret for just your ears and mine. My own, my own." They really knew how to sweet talk back then. Nowadays, what qualifies as a love note is, "It's getting late. Smash or pass." What? Meanwhile, Bud Light Seltzer has a new flavor. Flavor? Unfortunately, it's eggnog. Perfect for anyone who likes eggnog but hates themselves. They're calling this abomination Seltzernog and defining it as the original holiday fave eggnog with notes of sweet cinnamon and vanilla flavors in seltzer form. So the perfect thing to chase down your can of Christmas dinner.
Coming up, Michael C. Hall.
I'm Rachel Martin.
After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wild Card, wherever you get your podcasts. Only from NPR.
Good to see you. Nice to see you again.
You too.
I like the charcoal gray for the autumn and the vest. I don't see vests enough anymore.
Yeah, I'm trying to do my part.
It's very distinguished.
Bring it back.
It's very distinguished.
Thank you.
Now, you're a TV star. You're a Broadway vet. But you have recently added rock star to your resume with the new. You laugh, but I've got photos to prove it. Here we are. There it is. The band is called Princess Goes to the Butterfly Museum.
Yeah. Just succinct.
Exactly. Now, where Princess Goes to the Butterfly Museum, where's that come from?
Our keyboardist, Matt Katz-Bowen, this guy, she was 5 years old at the time. His daughter let him know at a time that coincided with us trying to come up with a name that she was thinking about starting a band, and she wanted to call it Princess Goes to the Butterfly Museum, and he asked her permission to take it. And she said yes, and that's how it was born.
I assume you're the singer. You have a voice of an angel.
Thank you. I am. Yes.
Okay. And you've also been writing songs for Princess Goes to the Butterfly Museum.
Yep.
Had you done a lot of that before this?
No, I hadn't. I hooked up with these guys. They were both involved in Hedwig, the musical.
Sure, yeah.
I met them through that. And they had started composing some instrumental tracks, and I just, for fun, offered to sing in the studio without any aspiration that we would become a band. But they, I don't know, we were sort of, something started happening. We were writing songs, and they
Has it come
gave
easily
me
to
permission.
You? Like, have you, like,
yeah,
any,
I guess
anything?
I've always written just for myself, and,
Hit me with some bars. What do you got? What do you got? Give me some lyrics you particularly enjoy.
Lyrics?
If you don't mind.
Okay. It's actually based on an experience my wife and I had doing therapeutic ketamine in a therapist's office. Totally legit, legal. But I had a really fantastic experience, and hers was a bit darker, and I was somewhat aware of that. But the lyrics are, at least some of them, I want to feel forever changing, but it's hard when all this rearranging means I might be losing you. I want to soar through candy canyons, but it's hard when my companions thrashing, kept from view. We're side by side, just within reach, but worlds apart. I'm building castles on the beach. You're tearing out your heart. And if I could, I'd cut your static. Then you'd hear the song. You'd roll with it. You'd come along. We'd break into the sky. Like that. I said, while I was going through my trip, I actually said, in spite of myself, I was like, I feel forever changing. And I felt her say, oh, please.
Okay, the last time we were together, you were actually performing in Lazarus, which was David Bowie's musical.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, I didn't get a chance to ask you then, what was it like the first time you met Bowie?
It was amazing.
I'm not sure what I would have done with myself.
I had to turn part of my brain off, I think, to deal with the fact that I was eye to eye with this icon, one of the great artists of the last century. I know he must have come through the door, but in my mind, he materialized in the room. It was in the East Village apartment of our music director. Mm-hmm. I said hello, we had a brief chat, and the next thing I knew, we were running through all the songs that I was gonna sing in the show. And I had...
So you could keep a professional.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I had the job, but I didn't really feel like I had it until I had his approval. And so he sat on the couch, and the opening bars to the song, Where Are We Now, started. And all my butterflies turned to bats. You know, I just became so nervous. Mm-hmm. And he, as he was, so graciously just named the absurdity of the moment and said, yes, sing my songs for me. And it put me at ease. And he was so generous, along with being sort of a next level beyond sort of icon, he was such a genuinely kind and enthusiastic man.
So what did it actually hit you that he was there? Like, you kept it together. When he left, what was that like?
I fell to the floor.
physically fell
down?
Yeah,
I just allowed myself to just release, and I just sort of, fell to the floor.
Since the last time you and I spoke, sadly, David Bowie died.
That's right.
And that was during the run of Lazarus. How did that affect y'all as a cast and as a performance?
Fate had it, it was on a Monday morning that we woke up to the news that he had died, and that day was the same day that we were going in to record the cast album. So we went in that day to sing and record all the songs with the knowledge that he died, and it was very eerie. I think we were also thankful, though, that we were able to come together and do something. But doing the show after that, it completely reframed the experience, you know.
We have to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. When we come back, I will ask Michael about the new Dexter, New Blood, on Showtime. Stick around.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
We are here with the star of Showtime's new Dexter, New Blood, Michael C. Hall. The new show is Dexter, New Blood.
Yeah.
And this has it's been 8 years since you've played this character.
Yeah.
Have there been, like, have there been pitches to come back together and before this?
Yeah, there have been some scripts, some outlines, some proposals, but the timing never felt right. The story never felt like it was one that was worth telling.
Uh-huh. Well, why? What's different about this?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with how much time has passed, because a lot of, as you saw in that clip, a lot of the story hinges on Dexter's relationship with his now full-grown son. Mm-hmm. And we had to wait for him to grow up.
Now, there was some of the fans had some problems with the finale of the original run of Dexter.
Yes.
I don't know if you have read anything about that.
Yeah, I've heard about it.
You've heard about that. Okay. is this a chance for another swing of the ball here?
For sure. I think a big part of our motivation was to leave people with a better taste in their mouth. I actually was suggesting that we call it Dexter New Taste, but they didn't go for it.
your fans are, fanatical is not the right word, but they're passionate about your character and about the show. I've been given this photo, and before I show it to anyone, I'm curious how this comes about, because this is an unusual thing for fans to want you to participate
in. Yeah, sometimes people will approach me with such an implement in their hands and ask me to sign it, and... And, you know,
how does that make you feel?
I have some misgivings about it, but when someone is presenting a knife,
so they walk towards you with a knife.
Will
out.
You sign this? You don't want to say no to such a person. You want to say yes. Though, I mean, I just keep my fingers crossed and hope that it's never used for a nefarious purpose.
Right, because your DNA is on that handle at some point.
Yeah,
you're in big trouble, Michael C. Hall.
Don't sign a knife.
Well, lovely to see you again. Thank you so
you
much
too.
For being here. Dexter New Blood premieres this Sunday on Showtime. It's Michael C. Hall, everybody.
Coming up, Michael Eric Dyson.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings early and ad-free starting May 1st with a 48 Hours Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts.
It's always nice to have you on.
That bubble gum is looking hot over there,
man. Isn't that good? Ooh, isn't that good?
Boom.
Now, sir.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back.
Thank you, my man.
The book is... Entertaining Race, Performing Blackness in America.
Right.
Congratulations on it.
Thank you, my friend.
You say...
Thank you.
It's hefty. It's hefty. It's a big subject.
It's
a big
hefty.
Subject. You say that Entertaining Race is a triple entendre.
Right.
What does that mean?
Well, first of all, it means that black people have been forced to entertain for the dominant society from the time of enslavement on. Mm-hmm. On slave ships, on plantations, at the behest of slave owners. Secondly, that black people have had to entertain the ideal of race, to talk about it. Selling, water on the street or lemonade or barbecuing in the park and being forced to be accountable for their presence in a way that is unruly and yet demanded. So we've had to entertain the ideal of race constantly, even when we don't want to. And then thirdly, we've had to be entertaining about how we talk about race. There's a great subject. It's very complicated. It's got a lot of nuance, and it's got a lot of controversy. So we have to find ways to get beyond it through humor, through self-deprecation, through exploration to get to the issues that are there.
What do you mean performing blackness? It says performing blackness in America. How is blackness performed?
In many ways. You know, you got one of the greatest performers over here, Jon Batiste. You know, he's a great performer.
And the whole band. And the whole band.
And the entire band. And the thing is that performing blackness is both about professional entertainment, about singing and dancing, but it's also about thinking and engaging in a society that doesn't see you as necessarily equal. When you go to work every day, you got to perform a kind of blackness. In spaces that are foreign to you as a black person, how do you make people feel comfortable? How do you get comfortable? How do you adjust yourself to them? And how do you bring the totality of your being into that experience without either savaging your ancestry but also honoring the traditions to which you speak?
You put yourself on the cover there, I noticed. Okay? So
You weren't available, so I had to do myself, you know?
Entertaining Race, and you're on the cover. Do you see yourself as... Well, first of all, how do you define entertainer, and are you an entertainer in a sense? I know you're an academic.
Yeah.
I know you're a scholar. You're a public philosopher in a way.
Right.
Is that also a form of entertainment?
Absolutely. When you think about the word entertainment, enter and tenere, right, to hold together, to hold, intertwined ways, two different ideas.
Is that really what the root of it is?
Yes.
It's about bringing people together? That's
absolutely
the idea?
Absolutely, and bringing people together and to engage in a dialogue or a thinking about a particular subject. So, yeah, as a scholar, my students can't fall asleep. I got to go in there and say something that's interesting and engaging. I can say, well, you know, Foucault talked about the insurrection of subjugated knowledges. That's cool. But if I go in there and talk about, look, Jay-Z said, Mom, you know, God forgive me for my brash delivery, but I remember vividly what these streets did to me. That's an exemplification of what Foucault meant.
In your new book, and this is where it's going to get controversial for us.
Okay.
Okay. In your new book, you say that Beyoncé is, quote, without question, the greatest entertainer this globe has ever seen.
Wow.
Okay. I will. Why Beyoncé? And then on my response.
Well, I mean, think about it. Beyoncé is an incredible singer. She's an incredible performer. She channels effortlessly this ancestral grace that has claimed her body, the magic of blackness that she constantly is, you know, putting forth. The pipes are incredible. The dancing on stage. Look, I saw Michael Jackson at his height, an extraordinary performer. Michael would do his thing. You know, and then he would, after, you know, two, three songs, go back, come back. She's performing 2 hours nonstop. She can sing, she can dance. Michael's vocal height was from, say, 10 to about 21. Beyoncé's is now strong at 40 as it ever has been at 20. So when I think about the ways in which she channels black ideas, when she channels American ideas, when she channels what it means to be a human being in context of harmony and melody, girl groups, channeling all of that beauty and power in one body and then making us be riveted by her performance, I think she's an extraordinary person.
Okay. I'm not going to fight you. I'm not going to fight you.
Right.
There is no greater fan of Beyoncé than yours truly. She's a dear friend, and I hope to meet her someday. Please come on the show. Please come on the show. John, you guys in the band, do you have any opinions? Who's the greatest entertainer of all time over there?
I gotta go for Prince myself.
Oh, all right. Defend yourself.
Prince was an extraordinary artist. I was on stage with Prince once. He said, I know Mr. Dyson can talk, but can he dance? I said, sir, you're talking to me? I got on stage and I danced along with Cedric the Entertainer. I love Prince, an incredible genius he was, but when you put it all together, singing, dancing, composing, embodying lyrics, Beyonce is unchallenged.
Anybody else got another one?
What you got? What you got?
I'd say James Brown.
James Brown.
James, look, James Brown was amazing. The fluidity of his movement, the way in which he was able to embody the black aesthetic, the drum became central, the percussive element. So on the one was the funk, he was amazing. The pompadour was out of this world. But again, when you talk about the ability to sustain
gotcha.
Time.
Anybody else? Hold on. Lampley.
All right, wild card. I like Louis Armstrong.
Oh, my.
I see green trees, bang.
Look, Louis Armstrong was amazing. I mean,
transformational.
Transformational. Chose what? July 4th, 1900 to be born. He wasn't really born that day, but he chose that day because American democracy was blown through his trumpet. Here was a man of epic, creativity who was able to articulate the blues sensibility of black people, but Beyonce.
We're good?
He's able to do that.
We're good.
Duke
Look,
Ellington.
I'm not gonna. And India, you got one?
Duke Ellington.
Duke Ellington.
I mean, Duke, with that piano before him, taking A Train, he was able to compose the incredible vitality of black art. He was able to pull in Johnny Hodges on the saxophone. He was able to give a voice to many singers, including Sarah Vaughan, but Beyonce.
Now listen, I only got two responses to this. And again, Beyonce, she's my SoulCycle emergency contact. We're super tight. Do the words Sammy Davis Jr. mean nothing in this town anymore?
I mean, Sammy Davis Jr. was a genius from 5 years old with the Will Mastin Trio. Here was a man
working. Dance, act.
Everything. He was capable of doing that. But when I put Beyonce next to Sammy Davis,
okay,
I think she's capable
Diana Ross, is there anyone today?
What?
Is there anyone today with the impact of Diana Ross? Come on, my friend. Diana Ross, Beyonce was fantastic in Dreamgirls.
Yes.
What a wonderful performance. You know who she's trying to play? Diana Ross.
Wait a minute. I have no doubt. Diana Ross at 75, extraordinary, exquisite, fusing with Berry Gordy's Motown. I am from Detroit. Motown founded in 1959. Diana Ross claiming the sweet, noble tendencies of black femininity and articulating them in a postmodern space where urban conditions were deriving and driving down black existence, but Beyonce. Is able
John, you
to rise
to
even
hold
above
on, hold on.
That.
Let's leave it with John. John, what you got?
I'll give you Beyonce, the Coachella performance. She is one of my heroes.
Yes.
In eras, it's like basketball. There's greats of each era.
Right.
But in the next 20 years, I'm coming for all of them.
This has been The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Watch The Late Show with Stephen Colbert weeknights at 11:35, 10:35 Central on CBS and Paramount Plus. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to The Late Show on YouTube for exclusive content and more.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.